Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
So it was not a very good night for the Golden State Warriors last night. Steve Kerr is going to be joining us here in just a moment on 95.7 The Game. And as a matter of fact, that moment is right now. Steve is always brought to us by Xfinity. Supercharge your home with supersonic Wi-Fi. Unbeatable internet only from Xfinity. Steve, as always, thank you so much for joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing well. As you know, I prefer to do this show after a rousing victory. So, poor timing this week, but, that's kind of on me.
So, we've been talking about how you have been jumping in front of the train of criticism that might have come for your team after what is maybe as frustrating and head-scratching loss as you guys have suffered all year. Before we get into the granular of what went wrong last night, you know, you're 20 and 21 through your first 41. If there was ever a time to assign a halftime grade, I guess it would be right now because we're halfway through. What is your first half report on the Golden State Warriors?
A C. We haven't been good enough, but. You know, we're passing the class because we're still right in the thick of everything playoff wise, but it's not good enough, obviously. So our guys know that, our staff knows that, and we do feel really good about our path ahead and where we're heading. But we've got to do better, and that's about as clear as I can make it.
So you're not prepared yet to start cheating on exams?
No, I will not be, nor will I be purchasing the Cliff Notes. I'm going to read the book. So we're going to get there.
What is the most, to your way of thinking, the most frustrating part of the first half? And you can't say injuries because everybody's got some and that's just bad luck. Yeah. Is it the fact that you haven't gotten consistent defense? You tell me. I mean, what's the thing that makes you grind your teeth the most about the first 41 games?
I think just the stops and starts. You know, we haven't really built momentum consistently. We've had a weird, home-road variance that would speak to, a lack of execution and resilience, because that's what you need to win on the road. So I think all in all, we're just not good enough right now. But having said that, I do feel very strongly that our team has the ability to get where we need to go. And I've watched these guys for years, our core guys, rise to the occasion. I know what they're made of. And heading into the second half, I think we can see pretty clearly on tape, some of the things that are causing us problems, and we're going to address those. And I believe in our guys. I think we'll get there.
So you have said that it's the games that look easy that are, like, by definition, the trap games waiting for you in this league, because other teams come out and they might be shorthanded, but shorthanded is opportunity for others, and this is a league full of competitive guys looking to take advantage of their opportunities. You said last night you blamed yourself for not having your guys ready to go. Did you mean tactically? Did you mean motivationally? Because you don't seem to look past teams So I'm going to put it more back on the guys in your locker room than you, to be totally honest with you, last night's loss. What can you do to change that? Because I don't think rah, 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 win one for the Gipper speeches really work well in professional sports, certainly not in a locker room as experienced as yours.
Yeah, I just feel like there's a couple losses like this every year, and every team goes through this, where during the 82, you run into a team that's wiped out, and you let your guard down, and that team comes in, and they've got seven or eight vets who are dying to play, and guys like Šarić last night, Torrey Craig, guys who maybe don't get to take on a role most nights, Josh Okogie, all these guys, they're pros. They've been around for a while, and they've had success, and I just feel like, when those nights happen, it's like I kick myself afterwards for not walking into the locker room and banging on the walls, during our pregame meeting and yelling, do you guys understand what's about to happen? And I think a lot of my colleagues go through the same thing. It's such a long haul, and there's just going to be sort of normal human emotion letdown games. And that was one of them. But I think on top of that, I just think my staff and I could have done a better job, preparing the team for, for Phoenix and what they do, how they like to play us. And I just didn't think it was a good night for any of us, staff or players. And we've got to acknowledge that and address it.
Just a suggestion to borrow from an Indiana guy. Should you look to get your team's attention, I recommend picking up the chair you're sitting in and throwing it across the court. You'll lead off SportsCenter, I can promise you that, Steve.
Yeah, that would work. I'd be out of a job, but, it might work for that night.
I want to pursue this a little bit because I'm wondering how you, pound the wall and say, do you guys get what's going on here, to a team of veterans? And it makes me think of when you were with the Bulls. That was a team that was long on years by the end of their run, and I'm wondering how many times Phil Jackson resorted to that.
I think it's different. Every team is different. Our team, my first 5 years coaching here, we might have had one of those once in a while, but it was much less likely to matter. I mean, that we weren't 500. We were cruising along in first place, and it was easy to withstand a game like that and move forward. But those same games happened back in the day. No matter what era you're talking about, like I said, it's sort of human nature, but it's also the nature of the NBA season, where you're going through this hall, and guys, you end up with, you'll hear the term schedule losses, schedule wins. Like, sometimes things are just lined up for you, and then sometimes things are lined up for a trap, and I think that was, in hindsight, sort of that, that perfect scenario last night, where, we're trying to reconfigure our rotation. We got a couple guys coming back in who haven't found the rhythm yet, and we're going against a team that's severely undermanned. That's a trap, and we fell into it.
You talk about how you're not where you want to be, and we're talking with Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. What is where you want to be? Can we talk a little bit about that destination? Is it a round of the playoffs? Is it a seed? Is it just your defensive effort? Like, give us the X marks the spot of where you want to be.
Yeah, it's what the game looks like. What the process looks like. Are we executing offensively? Are we defending with a purpose? Are we rebounding? Are all five guys engaged? Or are we, like last night, letting guys fly by us for offensive rebounds over and over? I thought Phoenix's physicality was the key to that game. They got into the ball late in the first quarter, took us out of our offense on several possessions, and finished the quarter on like an 8-0 run. And then 20 offensive rebounds for the game. because they were the more physical team, the more prepared, coached team. And we didn't match that. So what I'm talking about is, you know, having that preparation, having that look that you see from our team every year in the playoffs, where we know what we need to do and we do it. But we got to get there first. We can't wait until the playoffs to turn it on. We have to build better habits in a lot of areas in order to be prepared for that moment.
Can you do that realistically on a five-game road trip, or is this a much more gradual process and that we might be looking at post-All-Star break before you feel like you've got them in the kind of rhythm you're looking for and described just now?
No, this can happen quickly. I mean, you just look at our homestand just now, and I know we had injuries and all that, but the guys who were out there, they found a rhythm, and we won five games in a row, and everybody felt great about where we were, and then all of a sudden, we lose three games in a row, and like, oh my God, what happened? Where are we? So it can flip quickly. But the key is to really lay all that stuff bare, and that's what I try to do as a coach, just really be open and honest with the team about what's happening and watch the film and talk to guys individually, talk to them collectively, and try to inspire them to play a better, more complete game. And you do that a couple times on the road, that's how you get momentum.
So is Steph Curry standing in the way of your cohesion since he's the new guy in the room? I'm joking, obviously. But you know, like, he is back. It's good to see him back. When do you worry about just unleashing him and not worrying about him being back, but just looking at him as back? Could that happen as early as Friday? Minute restriction off. Here we go.
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw it in the fourth quarter. You know, we played him the whole fourth quarter, and you could see he finally kind of got through, broke through early fourth quarter, mid fourth quarter. He made a couple threes. It was like, okay, there it is. You know, his speed came back, his pop, you could just see it. Same thing with Wiggs. You know, Wiggs's role on this team is to be a defensive stopper, to put pressure on the ball, to rebound, you know, to make those high energy plays that we need to support, you know, the scoring of Steph and Clay and Jordan. And the great thing with Wiggs is that when he does that, he falls into points anyway. You know, the playoffs last year, perfect example. You know, 20-plus games in the playoffs, and he was our best defender, and he was a rebounding fool, we won the whole thing. Like, that's what it's got to look like. But you could see Wiggs wasn't himself until the fourth quarter. So he found it too. And I don't think Steph and Wiggs are just now automatically 100%, but they broke through a barrier last night, and I think that bodes well for the road trip.
How much longer until we see Jonathan Kuminga back part of the team picture?
Well, he hasn't practiced yet, so that's he's still a little bit away. We're going to need him. He's developed into a really good defensive player, plays an important role for us. So we'll see. I don't know how long it's going to be, but we need him back.
Wiseman going to be back in the mix anytime soon? Maybe on this road trip.
Same thing. Hasn't practiced, nor has Jermichael. So all three guys need to get some practice time in before we can count on any of them to play any game. So it's going to be a little bit.
Has Moses Moody completely fallen out of, I don't want to know, what is your favor, your rotation? It's been a while since we've seen him in any significant portion of a game. What's going on with his development, and might we expect him playing a part in your success this year at any time?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he played a part in our success last year, and he was a rookie then. So
I think that's why we're surprised he's not in the mix at all now, because it looked like a great start.
Yeah. I think what you have to keep in mind is there's only so many guys you can play, and frankly, Anthony Lamb and Ty Jerome have both played really well, and and play positions of need for us given the injuries, and that's why those guys have seen more minutes than Moses. I'm a big fan of Moses. I think he's got a bright future. And what I told him was that this is year two of a 15-year journey, so you can't look at it, you know, game to game. Can't be this emotional roller coaster. You just have to look at it big picture, and I think Moses will be fine. It's just it takes time for young players to develop, and this is all part of his development.
You've said in the past that one of the things that you've had going for you as a team is the fact that nobody has really sort of taken command of the conference and run away from everybody else. Are you running out of time to be able to apply that logic? Do you see teams that are poised to start running away from things if you can't get your stuff together? Or do you think it's going to be the kind of year where, you know, a team's going to win 56 games and win the conference and you'll be in it throughout?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously over the last three games, you know, we've fallen behind Memphis and Denver. You know, the teams that have extended themselves a little bit, and you look at half the season left, and all of a sudden you're seven games back instead of three or four. That's a big difference. So I don't pay too close attention to that. I think what our team and I are most interested in is the process of getting better and playing well and stringing together some good games. We do that, and we start winning, then all that stuff kind of takes care of itself. And ideally you want to be healthy and playing well going into the playoffs, and you want to avoid the play-in tournament, and those are all things that are well within our grasp.
Steve, will the romance of a game in the Alamo Dome wash over you at any point in time on Friday?
I'm looking forward to it. It's going to look different. I mean, when I played in the Dome with the Spurs, we played in the corner of the Dome, and they rolled up some bleachers and a huge curtain, and you played in, kind of one pocket of it. This game, as I understand it, is going to be played in the middle of the Dome, and it's going to feel like we're out in the middle of nowhere. And we're flying in tomorrow first thing, and then practicing once we get there, which will be good for our guys to get a some shooting up, get used to the sidelines and all that. But I am looking forward to it. Just a place that my family and I spent for many years in, and a lot of great memories with my time with the Spurs. So it's always fun going back there.
It's going to feel like a Final Four game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it will feel like a Final Four, and some of our guys have experienced, that type of atmosphere. Draymond, Steph, both in college, played it in domes. I think Dante and Jordan Poole played in Final Fours in big, huge domes, so there is some experience with it.
Let me ask a more pertinent and burning question that may strike you weird. Who are you rooting for on Saturday, Pete Carroll or the local football team?
I'll tell you what, I've really enjoyed watching the Niners this year. I've gotten to know John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan a little bit. I went down to their facility early in the season, watched them practice, spent some time with them, spent some time with both of them in the off season in San Diego. So. Being here in town, it's easy to just feel the energy for the Niners and the momentum they've got, and I'm absolutely pulling for the Niners, and just don't tell Pete that.
You got a back to back on this 5-game road trip. Starts in San Antonio, then it goes to Chicago. You're going to take on Washington as well. Does that include a trip to the White House for you guys this year?
Yeah, we're excited about that. We'll be going there, I think, the day after our game. Tuesday, I believe. Yeah, so. We're excited about that. Everybody's got to bring a suit. I haven't had to do that on road trips in a while. But no, that'll be a great treat, and our guys are really looking forward to it.
Has Steph reached the plateau of fame that officially has presidents more excited to meet him than he is excited to meet presidents?
Probably. I think that's a fair statement.
So he's basically going to walk up and say, "Say, Joey, what's happening?"
Probably. Something like that.
I want to go back to your visit to the 49ers just briefly. When you go to another team to sort of talk to them about how they do things, what specific questions do you ask? What are you looking for in terms of knowledge from people who basically operate a different sport in a different atmosphere under sort of different external forces? What is it you wanted to know from the Niners, and what is it you generally want to know when you talk to people from other teams and other sports?
Yeah, so when I visited with Kyle last summer, we didn't play in the same group, but we were part of a couple of foursomes that went out, and we had a beer afterwards, and we were sitting there after the round, and I said, I just am interested in the details. Like, I love football. You know, you watch the quarterback come up to the line, and he's pointing out, 51's the mic, and, saying all this terminology, and Omaha, and, and so I just asked Kyle, like, what does all that mean? Like, what's happening? What is the quarterback talking about? And it was fascinating hearing his answer, because he explained what, quarterbacks are doing in general, pointing out the where the middle linebacker is to help the offensive line, in their blocking scheme. But then he followed it up by saying, I think some of that is just overkill. And, I like to simplify things for my teams and my quarterbacks. And, like, that stuff translates directly to what we do and what we teach. And I think there are a lot of things that I've learned from football and from soccer that you can implement on the basketball court. And that's one of them. Like, we might run, five or six basic patterns with the Warriors. How can we simplify that? And one way to simplify it is to have, different, you can dress it up, you can dress up your stuff with different looks, but then you're still running the same action. That's a good way to keep it simple for the players, because then they know, like, these are your main five or six actions. The other stuff is just sort of, you're trying to confuse the defense. It's the same concept in terms of after timeout plays in basketball.
That was a great question, Ray. And that was a great answer, Steve. Thank you very much. That was good.
Never mind that. Who bought the beer?
I think Kirk McCaskill, former Angel pitcher, you may remember. I think he paid for the beers that day.
So that's what you do when you go to other teams. You look for a third guy to pick up the tab.
Always.
Smart.
Always.
Yeah. That's very, very, that's good scouting is what that is. How often, since we're talking about what you learn and what you need to change and, like, the skullduggery of it all, how often do you have to change up your in-game calls because, the other dugout is studying the third base coach?
Yeah, you don't do a ton of that. Every NBA team has a traveling scout that is looking at that, and they're sitting courtside. We have our own Scott Vaughn, who sits courtside. At the last Spurs game, he was definitely there, and he was charting all of Pop's calls. And you can, if you want, you can kind of mess around with that a little bit. One way to do it is, you could they run an out of bounds play, and instead of naming the out of bounds play, let's say you watched a college game and Michigan, ran a great out-of-bounds play. You could call it Michigan, or you could just, say to the team, hey, any Big Ten school we name, that's the same play. So you could run the same play and call it Iowa State and try to confuse your your opponent. We've done that before. The problem is you usually confuse your own guys, too, so you got to be a little careful.
I mean, Iowa State's in the Big 12, so you just confuse yourself.
Okay,
there
point.
You go. Steve, thank you for joining us, as always. Good luck on the road trip. Further health to you and your team going forward. I know you want the second half to be a lot better than the first half, and I'm just happy to learn that when you get together with other coaches, you're not talking about Bay Area media members you want to go about avoiding. So that's music to my ears. Thank you very, very much, as always, and good luck.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Steve Kerr here, brought to you by Xfinity. It's a good conversation. Good stuff at the end there. I'm glad you came back to that question. It was interesting. What do these guys talk about? How much can a coach learn from another coach? It's fascinating.
Yeah, and I guess I was curious because those always seem from the outside to be pretty pro forma. Just, you know, a professional courtesy to somebody else who's making $9 million a year.
It's a photo op more than anything.
Yeah, but it's also good to know that they drag in former baseball players to
pick up rounds.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of detail that I think you expect to see from a coach is, you know, we need to bring in a sucker. And I think that's a valuable skill. Just go, okay, who can we work?
Get a fall guy, get a Rube. Get a fan.
Get a mark.
Absolutely. I wonder if Bob Myers has not already marked Steve Kerr as an eventual guest. Have you seen this news today?
I heard.
Bob Myers and Peyton Manning are now partners. Maybe this is why Bob has decided he doesn't want to be in the NBA anymore. It's time for him to be a podcaster or a broadcaster, and he'll be leaving the Golden State Warriors for a job behind a microphone, as glorious and glamorous as they indeed are. All jokes aside, ESPN and Omaha Productions are launching a new podcast hosted by Bob Myers. The name of the podcast is going to be called Lead by Example with Bob Myers. It debuts on January 17th. And his first guest is going to be Ryan Rollins. I'm kidding, of course. The first guest is going to be Steph Curry.
Yeah, funny the way that works.
Yeah. All proceeds, and you got to give Bob all credit to this, whatever they are paying him, whether it's a lot or a little, all proceeds are going to go to the Warriors Community Fund. So that's very nice of Bob to do that. Bob's done well in his career, probably doesn't need the pittance that careers with microphones usually make for guys.
Oh no, you get 20 mil out of a deal with Peyton Manning because he's swimming in money too.
Well, again, as we talk about Bob Myers' future with the Golden State Warriors having a level of uncertainty around it right now that it's never had before, you know, we've discussed, is Bob weighing his options? Would Bob like a lucrative career somewhere else in sports that doesn't come with an iota of the stress of trying to win an NBA championship every single day you're rolling out of bed?
He's going to put pressure on himself wherever he works. And if he doesn't, his boss will do it for him because he comes with a resume that basically says, I've won titles there, now win a title for me. So I think that pressure is always going to be there unless he wants to get out of the business entirely. I think this is largely, and I know you'll be surprised by this, this is largely about money. And money either in terms of just contractual cash or equity. Because equity is what general managers who do what Bob Myers has done usually get. They usually get a piece of the action. Billy Beane got 5% of the A's without winning a title. And I think Joe Lacob, you know, unless he feels like Bob Myers is somehow holding him up, he's got equity to spare. I don't think that's a big problem.
Well,
and it shouldn't be.
There's a real big difference between 1% of worth something about $500,000 or $500 million and 1% of something that's worth $8 billion. So maybe because the Warriors are now at a level that no one could have ever foreseen, maybe equity isn't the nickel that gets flipped ceremoniously any longer, because that's no longer a nickel. That's hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, if it's just 1%, it doesn't have to be that. Because, I mean, and in terms of what Billy Beane made or didn't make, it was interesting today that Front Office Sports reported that Major League Baseball took in $10.8 billion in calendar year 2022, which is the most they've ever taken in, which means that whatever you want to say about dwindling attendance or the A's don't know what they're doing about this, that, or the other thing, they still took, you know, if you divide $10.8 billion by 30, they took in $330 million off this media deal and all the other things that Major League Baseball generates. So equity is lots of different things for lots of different reasons. And I think that if Joe Lacob wants to start squeezing quarters on the general manager who's delivered four rings...
I guess my point is these are no longer quarters.
No, but metaphorical quarters. I mean, he doesn't have an excuse for letting this fail over money. That will be Joe Lacob's fault and entirely his.
There's no indication that he is about to make that fault.
No, that's
to
I'm simply
credit.
Saying if Bob Myers leaves because they can't come to an agreement on proper compensation, Joe Lacob will be at fault there, period. Because you don't let a guy with Bob Myers' resume and number of years still to perform the job at the level that he's been performing it, you don't get to skate on, gee, we were $3 million a year apart. You know, shut up. Pay him the three. Period.
Seems like the right thing to do, considering all that has happened. Since we're talking about general managers, two little bits of news to fold in around the topic of GMs. 49ers assistant general manager Adam Peters, who was the vice president of player personnel before he got the bump in title, is turning down interviews specifically with the Tennessee Titans, and there's one other team that he said thanks but no thanks to officially.
Arizona.
It was Arizona. And he is turning down general manager interviews. This is his 20th NFL season. He came to the Niners in 2016, even though Adam Peters is not a household name. He has been an industry-wide name in up-and-coming player personnel guys in football for years now. He is, without doubt, Ray, ready for his I can be a GM somewhere else close-up. What I think is about to happen is he's turning down these jobs because there has already sort of been a reshuffling of titles agreed upon down in Santa Clara. I wouldn't be surprised at all that when this year is over and you get into the business of your offseason and reorganizing and replacing coaches and what else and so on and so forth, I bet you that John Lynch gets promoted to a new title that is, you know, executive director of football operations or something like that. You see Adam Peters installed as the title-holding general manager while Kyle Shanahan retains all final decision-making power over the whole thing, which means it's his operation anyways. And these other two jobs, as important as they are, their titles are a bit ceremonious than they are matter of fact. I bet you that's what happens. I bet you there's a nice bump for Adam Peters to stay, a new title of GM on him. John Lynch gets kicked upstairs to an even grander title, if you will. And Shanahan stays in charge of the day-to-day operations anyway.
But it's not so much the titles, though, as much as it is the responsibilities. Because, and this is true in baseball now, there are a lot of guys who run baseball operations departments but aren't the general manager. Because in an increasing number of franchises, the general manager is the one who has to deal with the owner and has to deal with, you know, media rights and has to deal with stuff that isn't baseball. And so there are a lot of guys who run baseball departments who don't want to do all that. And Adam Peters might very well be that guy who just says, I don't want to have to go speak to the Rotary Club. You know, I don't want to have to fly out for league meetings. I want to do football. And it doesn't really matter what his title is. There's probably a bump coming for him financially, but it doesn't really matter if he gets a different title as long as he's not the one who has to go trotting up to Jed to explain this, that, or the other bit of minutia. Some guys just want to do scouting and football ops. And he might very well be one of those, because if he's saying, I don't want to be the general manager in Arizona, and I don't want to be the general manager in Tennessee, what that sounds like to me is, I don't want to get further away from the football part and closer to the holding hands with the owner part. Because the holding hands with the owner part can be a real pain in the arse.
As a 49er fan, with your own interests, of course, being selfish, let me just say this. No matter what Adam Peters calls himself, no matter how often he needs to bring good or bad news to Jed York's desk, no matter what his job entails, if his job remains in San Francisco, advantage Niners. He's good at what he does.
But if John Lynch is getting kicked upstairs with a fancier new title, that probably means he's going to have to be the one who does the Rotary Club and the holding hands with Jed. And
I think John kind of likes that. He's a schmoozer.
And he might very well. I mean,
and he's good at
but
it.
But Adam Peters has always struck me not as a company guy, but as a football guy. And football guys like to be left to the football.
Well, here's the deal about Adam Peters. Outside of being able to recognize him, I have never heard him say a peep on the record in a press conference. I have no idea and what he would be like in front of the media.
And that's another thing that he probably likes, is that he doesn't have to do the dog and ponies.
Since we're talking GMs, there's one other that I'd like to bring up here and now, and his name is Farhan. Ray, I've been talking to enough people this offseason. Media members, current major leaguers, former major leaguers, current former San Francisco Giants. I got sources, is what I'm basically trying to tell you. Because I want to keep those sources close to my ears. I'm not going to tell you who they are.
Grandy.
It's not Grandy. But he might have some inside information for us tomorrow, so stay tuned to 3 o'clock. Farhan has communication issues. And it's part of the reason why the San Francisco Giants do not land big fishes. This is a shared feeling that Farhan has communication issues. It's a shared feeling in the clubhouse. It's a shared feeling among agents. It's a shared feeling among free agents. And he moves at his own speed, which projects, right or wrong, a level of aloofness and arrogance and detachment from concepts of urgency that other players really want to feel when they're being pursued. You know, how do you make me feel is a big part of who you end up settling down with. Of course, big buckets of money always help as well. Players think Kapler is a bit of an oddball. Just, you know, he's like, they kind of laugh like, geez, he's still really into push-ups for someone who should be further down the road than that. It's not that either one of these guys have bad reputations, but Kapler's kind of an oddball in the eyes of players, current, former, future, prospects, whatever. And Farhan has got a little Dorcas Malorcas that runs through him so hard that he is not the on-the-phone charming communicator that sometimes you might need to close deals. And all things considered, this ballpark's reputation for suppressing offensive everything does absolutely no favors to break the tie. So they got a quirky GM, a quirky manager, and a ballpark that scares guys away. And all of these things are factoring into yet another, that didn't go the way they planned it offseason. Ray, I know you talked to people, you got sources. Have you heard this about Kapler and Farhan?
You find that I have not heard that specifically about Farhan, but you find that more and more general managers who are analytically bent tend not to worry about the schmoozing part. And this is not just, dealing with the media, because Farhan can do that dance when he wants to, but he doesn't do it very often. And I think it's because he doesn't like to. I mean, he's a little bit like David Forst over in Oakland, who does that relatively grudgingly. He doesn't enjoy that part of it because you know, he doesn't view that as an important part of the job. And maybe it isn't media-wise, but if that's a problem for Farhan in terms of dealing with agents, dealing with players, and he doesn't have a representative in the dugout who can help smooth that over, if Kapler is the, quote, the weirdo that you suggest he is, then, yeah, that's a hole in the organization. And it isn't just that Farhan doesn't do it. It's that maybe it's not getting done. And so you can apportion that any way you want, but somebody has to be able to be the person you can reach out and touch. And when Brian Sabian was the general manager, you know, he didn't hang around to do a lot of media stuff, but he spoke baseball. And he spoke baseball to agents.
Fluently.
He spoke baseball to players. He spoke baseball to other scouts. And that's a skill that you perfect over the years. And maybe Farhan simply hasn't been at this long enough. But if it's a hole that they've got, he's got to figure out how to fill it, whether it's him or somebody else.
Meanwhile, Carlos Correa was introduced in Minnesota today. He says he is very happy that he'll be raising his kid Minnesota nice, and he's got about a half decade of Juicy Lucy's to enjoy in front of him. Look it up, kids. It's a burger with a cheese inside. When we do return, it is for just a moment or two. Two questions that we might have, well, one question and one observation that we should have brought up right after the 49ers actually beat Arizona in the final game of the year. If we don't get to it today, it's officially old news. So that is coming up next. Plus, we will pay tribute to the man who invented the concept of the fluffy cloud. So don't go anywhere. Damon and Ratto here. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast. Now back to Damon and Ratto on 95.7 The Game.
All right, it's officially time to wrap things up, Ray, with a couple of points. A question that we might have asked earlier in the week when the win over Arizona was fresher in our minds than the game that's coming up against the Seattle Seahawks. So I'm going to ask you right now, do you think that was really the final game for J.J. Watt?
Yeah. He's going to make more money not beating his head against the walls than he was making it beating his head against the walls. And he's been at this long enough that, A, he knows that there's a fortune waiting for him. And I think he's also looking at a career that, frankly, is in decline because he's played a lot of years and he had a lot of collisions. And I'm not saying that he's infirm, but he might be one of those guys who has the option to leave when he wants to. Because I cannot imagine when he started his career, he thought it would end with the Arizona Cardinals.
No, he probably couldn't have imagined a career either where he was a five-time Pro Bowler, five-time All-Pro, three-time Defensive Player of the Year, Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, All-Decade Team, and very likely a first-ballot Hall of Famer. So why not get off the stage while the getting's good? And he strikes me as a guy, like, take him at his word, face value kind of guy. And he's got a big personality. If he wants a media career, that's waiting for him. He also says he wants to spend an awful lot of time with his newborn son. But maybe he gets that itch to chase a ring, because if there's anything he also is, and I say this with all love and respect, he is a premier football meathead. And those guys love chasing championships. Could you imagine J.J. Watt on a I'm chasing a ring flyer with the Niners?
I've never given that a moment's thought, but that's one of the positions where they don't really need J.J. Watt. They are covered. And again, I also think that his days as...
2 sacks in his final game. He had 12 and a half on the year, Ray.
Yeah. Sacks they don't have a problem with. I would use my money elsewhere.
Hey, fewer sacks this year than last year. Not that we're criticizing, but we are counting these.
But
teams.
I mean, I think it's fair to look at his career and say he's been better. And sure. That's not a criticism. I just think, A, the Niners don't need him, and B, I'm not sure he is that football meathead that continues to need it. Because if he's looking at the kind of money that he's going to look at post-career...
Well, you now have broadcasting opportunities that pay better than playing opportunities. There is no doubt about that. But I will say this about J.J. Watt.
He's a competitor.
So we'll see when it's all said and done. Speaking of a competitor, there was never a competitor that Bob Ross didn't defeat easily if the competition was painting on PBS. Ray, today, 40 years ago, The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross debuted on PBS January 11th, 1983. It's like meditation. Have you ever watched The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross? If you say you never have, you're lying.
No, I have never watched. I've never been interested. I know that it existed because people would make fun of it, but I'm not interested in painting. I hire people to paint. I don't need to. I'm not.
When's the last time you commissioned artwork?
In a previous life, maybe in the 13th century.
I'm going to tell you right now, you could do a lot worse than spending a half an hour of a Sunday afternoon with Bob Ross in a rerun. He would have the squirrel Peanut that would come out of his pocket. He had a pet squirrel, Ray. And he had an afro. And he was an unbelievable painter. If you like the same painting of a woodsy sort of cabin over and over and over again. But it's amazing how he could do it. And just when you think he had that painting perfect, this SOB would drop a big tree trunk right in the middle of the whole damn thing, changing the foreground and background. And you're like, oh no, he ruined that painting with a tree. He had the fluffy clouds. He had everything he needed. And then this damn tree comes in to ruin the painting. 5 minutes later, you'd be like, that tree's perfect there. What a brilliant artistic choice he made.
He sounds like a rustic version of Thomas Kincaid.
Kind of. That's when...
And that sounds absolutely repellent to me. I'm glad I've never seen it.
Oh, no, but he was much better than Thomas Kincaid. Much better.
I know there was a gallery of Thomas Kincaid stuff in Scottsdale, Arizona.
In the mall, too.
Yeah, where you charged through the nose for a Kincaid painting, even though it was...
A poster at that point.
Whatever it was. I never saw a Bob Ross gallery.
So...
And in any event... I wouldn't watch either of them.
There's a documentary about Bob Ross. It's really good. You should check that.
There's a documentary about everything. We are sick with documentaries. And most of them never needed to be made. But we have 7,000 channels and they all must be filled with something.
By the way, I texted Bob Myers today and I was like, oh, great, Bob. The world needs another podcast. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I mean.
He wrote back. He's like, thanks, Sam. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I just. That's probably one I'll miss, too.
What if he gets more downloads, Bob Myers does, than Draymond Green? Jealousy afoot?
No, because Draymond's going to be getting that TNT money.
He will be getting that TNT money.
The podcast, I mean, he's doing that in his pajamas.
Did you see Shaquille O'Neal's new hairline last night? They were making fun of it. Or maybe you didn't stick around for postgame. A lot of Warriors fans probably didn't. Shaquille O'Neal was... Looked like he had a drive-in movie screen based on the way that he took what is normally like a circumference issue and just made it into a straight line across his head. He had the give me the Jalen Rose.
The James Brown.
The very stark line of demarcation that is your hairline
where your forehead starts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not the Godfather of Soul Change.
I do not remember him having hair. So it never occurred to me to think of seeing that. And especially how that the show tends to deteriorate when they have to follow the West Coast game. Because it's 1:30 in the morning and you know that they'd rather be asleep or drunk.
Well, and you got the players only with the backup crew other than Shaq. And by the way, although, like Candace Parker.
Candace Parker is great.
She should be
part of the main four because she's the conscience that Kenny Smith tries to be. Because I believe she would tell Shaq and Charles to shut up. And she would be right to do so. She might be.
There's no doubt that Draymond's going to be perfect for that role.
Yeah,
well.
She might be one of the five best studio analysts in any sport in America.
By the way, let me drop this too, because there's one other thing from that game against the Arizona Cardinals that we didn't bring up, and I should have just piggybacked right off of J.J. Watt and his career sacks, because the Ty McGill sack celebration where he did the yummy, yummy in my tummy, we should have brought that up earlier in the week. Normally, to see hip movement like that, you got to go to the Gold Club. Ray, what'd you think of the yummy, yummy in my tummy egregious hip swivel on Ty McGill?
I suspect we'll hear about a fine on Friday when the NFL usually announces its fines.
It really did have the perfect amount of sass on it. So, bravo. Bravo to all involved in this program. Thanks to Steve Kerr and Mike Salk. John, thank you for filling in today. Grandy, thank you very much. Evan, thank you very, very much for sticking around. Although I've never seen you actually leave the building. I think you might live in a utility closet. Let us know where you're getting your mail, Evan.
Getting it here because it's in lieu of salary. He can't afford to live anywhere.
Hey, but we will receive your parcels. That's the kind of company we are here.
Yeah, he knows the FedEx guy personally.
Sports don't build character. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.